AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. CBS News has learned that documents marked classified from President Biden's vice presidency were also found at a location other than a think tank that bears his name. CBS's Adriana Diaz.
We are learning that as part of the Justice Department's review, officials looked at the possibility of classified documents at other locations. And sources tell us that the number of classified documents that they have found is larger than initially believed. The top Democrat and top Republican on the Senate Intelligence Committee today called for an official damage assessment from the Director of National Intelligence, and that came before we found out about the additional location.
Today, the White House declined to answer repeated questions about when the president learned about the first batch of classified documents and why the discovery wasn't disclosed sooner, citing the Justice Department review. Under new Republican leadership, the House Oversight Committee is focusing its attention on President Biden and his son Hunter's business dealings. CBS's Zach Kuda.
Representative James Comer, the panel's chair, requested details about the Biden family finances from the Treasury Department and mandated that Twitter executives respond to allegations that they tried to suppress damning information about the Bidens. At a press conference, Comer was emphatic that the probe would not center on Hunter Biden. "This is an investigation of Joe Biden," he said.
An update on the huge aviation meltdown today that forced a 90-minute stop on all U.S. departing flights.
I'm Matt Piper. The FAA is blaming the meltdown on a damaged database file. The agency says that at this time, there's no evidence of a cyber attack. It says it's still undergoing thorough reviews to learn more about the notice-to-air mission system outage amid what was the first national grounding of flights in about two decades.
The system has been recovering after thousands of canceled and delayed flights. Californians are trying to clean up in between rainstorms. Montecito was evacuated over flooding and mudslide concerns. This man chose to ride it out.
My home is in a safe place. And, you know, from past experience, I have never had any problems.
Parts of Northern California will see more rain in the coming days. Our Steve Futterman on the death of a rock legend.
He was a master on the guitar. Jeff Beck's riffs were legendary in the world of rock. He first earned fame as a member of the 60s group The Yardbirds.
And I know. If you had me back again.
There would be numerous memorable hits.
Hey.
He played alongside legends like Jimi Hendrix and Eric Clapton. He nearly joined the Rolling Stones. Jeff Beck died from bacterial meningitis. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Mantner with your headlines. Wisconsin Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu expected to introduce a plan this week that will create a 3.5% flat tax. Opponents of the flat tax say it only benefits the rich, but the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reports LeMahieu says he would like to see a portion of Wisconsin's $6.6 billion budget surplus be used to give everyone a tax cut. The measure will likely be blocked by Democratic Governor Tony Evers. Evers promoting a separate plan to cut income taxes by 10% for the middle class. A section of I-94 in Monroe County closed this morning because of icy conditions causing numerous crashes. The State Patrol shut down 94 between Wisconsin 21 on the north side of Toma and Highway EW at Warrens due to what they're describing as impassable conditions. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does a $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to The Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
What grows in the forest? Our imagination and our family bonds. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station. The Shaw, 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls, always streaming at
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Michigan looking at you. I'm hoping, very much so hoping, Michigan, you're going to show the Democrats how to actually govern. Michigan is going to show us how to get it done so that in 2024, if Democrats take power again, maybe they'll have the blueprints of how to move an agenda. I'm hoping that the good folks there in Michigan who have swept into controlling all of the branches of government now use that power. Now, remember, a couple years ago, Virginia did this. They took the governor's mansion. They had the General Assembly. They had the power to do pretty much what they wanted. And I would argue, well, not so much. And it's always been my view that when you get the keys to the car, drive it. When you have the steamroller, pave the road. Simple. Give people a reason to vote for you. And this is where I keep telling my Democratic friends. Push those policies we all want. Do the things working people want you to do. For instance, I got a memo of some of the things that are going to be moving in the legislation that's going to be moving in Michigan that I think will do very good things for working people. A couple of pieces of legislation that are going out. One that would enable workers to keep more of their hard-earned cash by expanding and increasing the earned income tax credit. People with kids who have jobs, because again, remember, we want people to have jobs. We want people to have children. We want them to be able to support those kids. Getting them the resources they need to help support their families. Smart idea, good policy. Something Republicans should be all in favor of. Because in fact, the earned income tax credit was, if you remember, something that came up during the Reagan years. Yeah, because we wanted those people to keep jobs. We want them to have kids. So instead of, welfare programs, We gave him a little bit of help with the job stuff. I'm in favor of that. As you know, and I take heat for this every time I say it, and I will say it again, I'm against handout programs. As a kid growing up, there was nothing worse than having to go into stores with clown money to buy food. I'm against handout programs. People want jobs. People want opportunity. They want hope for the future. So instead of welfare checks, we need paychecks. And if the private sector can't or won't create enough jobs to ensure that everyone has a job that sufficiently covers their needs and some of their wants, then the public sector has to step in and fill that void. And this is where, again, we have the ability to do this. We're the wealthiest country in the history of civilization at its wealthiest moment. We just choose not to. So again, Michigan, looking at you, and this is a good first step. Expand and give more people the opportunity to get the earned income tax credit. Good thing. Also, going to go and restore the state's prevailing wage law. That is a huge thing. And you go, well, what's the big deal about that? Why is that such a big thing? Well, one, it's going to ensure that you have a local building trade. It's going to make sure you have local construction people, local craftspeople. So when you need a school or a bridge or anything, you have qualified, skilled people locally who are going to be building that stuff, and that they and their children will be going in and out of those buildings, so we know they're going to build it right with some pride, some dignity, and then you're going to have to put up with them driving by going, I built that. Also, the other important, the more important part of this, what prevailing wage laws do is they ensure that those jobs are compensated at a very good rate. With health care, with retirement, with safe conditions. And that permeates the local community. It is a good for the entire community. Those wages that those workers earn, where do you think that money goes? Goes down to Joe's hardware store or to Marianne's kitchen, or it goes to the local economy. And it reverberates and bangs through that local economy and creates more jobs. It is smart policy. It is good policy. You know where it doesn't go? Into the pockets of the contractors. Which, without prevailing wage laws, what we know happens is they cheat the workers out of wages, they cheat them out of benefits, they cheat them out of health care and retirement, and cut corners at every opportunity so that they can enrich themselves. So we got this scenario plays out time and time again. We got very wealthy handfuls and struggling everyone else. Bad policy gets us bad outcomes. Conversely, good policy, good outcomes. So good on Michigan for looking at this as well. Also, they're talking about repealing the state's No Rights at Work. They're going to undo the Right to Work bill that was rammed through like thieves in the night back, I think it was 2012 in the lame duck. Because it doesn't work. And all you have to do to know that neither of these policies work is look at West Virginia. You got a radical Trumpy governor there, Jim Justice, who came out not too long ago and said, look, you know, we did what you wanted. We did all of it. All of it. Undid our prevailing wage, passed the No Rights at Work, went after workers' comp, went after, you name it, they went after it. We're going to be business friendly. And look, West Virginia has been business friendly forever. They've been raping the ground and stealing the profits for generations. And who doesn't benefit? Well, the working people. And they went even further and it didn't work because bad policy doesn't work. So I'm looking at this and I'm looking at Michigan and going, look, it's time, Michigan. It's time to ensure that when you get the keys, you show the Democrats how to move the right policies. The things that built a prosperous working class. The things that gave us that iconic middle class we talk about. Which is nothing but a prosperous working class. People who have hope and opportunity that tomorrow they're going to be able to buy a house. Some of the stories we've heard from people talking about union jobs, better lives. Being able to see a dentist, being able to get their own bedroom as children because the family was able to buy a house, being able to get food at the end of the month, being able to get a secondhand car, all the stories that we've heard. That's what these policies do. And for too long, we've been undoing them. And here in the near future, working on it diligently, because it came up during my interview with former Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh, that we're going to sit down and he wants to argue trickle-down economics. And look, there's nothing more than I would like to do than have a couple of beers and get into a room with Joe and not let anybody out. But more importantly, having those conversations about what kind of an economy do we want? And who are the winners and who are the losers? Because in all of the conservative supply-side voodoo Reaganomic era of trickle-down, of deregulation, of bad neoliberal trade, who are the winners? Who are the losers? It's always been my premise that all of those policies are working exactly as intended. our broken tax code, our bad trade deals, the whole no rights at work agenda working exactly as it was supposed to work. And that is the clawback wages, hours, conditions from you and me. It's about crushing the power of working people. And you go back to the last great opportunity. Because think about it. We were able to build this incredible, powerful, prosperous working class out of the Great Depression. And how did we do it? We did it through great policy. The New Deal gave us tools to be able to organize, tools to ensure that we had a floor under our feet, a safety net for our children, a safety net for our seniors, opportunity to get health care, education, all kinds of things. We took a high road policy position to make lives better. And things were going great. One income supported a family. The fabulous 50s were, listen to a MAGA person, they'll tell you, that's when America was great. Fast forward to the late 1970s. We've got stagflation. We've got all of these economic problems. Thank you, corporate America. And what do they do? They bring in Paul Volcker. They bring in a Federal Reserve with an aggressive policy to crush inflation. Now understand, for those people whose wages kept up, like my grandparents, because my grandparents bought a house in the 1960s for like $16,000, $18,000 at the time. At the end of the stagflation period, because of their union contracts that had cost of living adjustments in it, their mortgage from the 1960s was a day's pay at the end of the 1970s. They did okay because their wages kept up with the inflation. Their wages didn't get eaten away like it is, like it's happening now, because their contracts made sure it happened. So as the Federal Reserve was doing everything they could do to make work painful in this country, to cause massive unemployment, to crush the power of workers to demand better wages, hours, and conditions, some people did okay. And when the policy of our government is, hey, how do we make people's lives worse so we can enrich the wealthy? I struggle. And we're in one of these moments now, folks. You got a Federal Reserve who's admitted we're raising interest rates. We're aggressively raising interest rates. And some economists are arguing for no reason whatsoever, because wages are not what's driving the inflation. And also, you've now got a Supreme Court who's going, well, those workers are getting a little uppity, demanding better wages, hours, conditions by striking. Now we may put some, we're going to curtail that power. Understand, it's the policies. It's the things that we allow to happen in our government. And as divided as we are, red hat, blue hat, you know, look, some of the most MAGA extreme Trumpkins that I know are good, decent union people who want to support their families and want the best economic outcomes. It's they've bought the wrong outrage. They're outraged at nonsense while they're being robbed blind because they're not seeing it. This is our responsibility to take this moment. And refocus it back on what's really important. We are being robbed blind. Ask anybody who's my age and older, in their 50s and in early 60s, the job they had back in the early 80s, the mid 80s. How much were they making back then? Late 70s. In dollar terms, what were they making back then in manufacturing? And it's interestingly enough, right about the same as they're making now. No economic gimmickry, no inflation calculations or weird triangulations. No, dollar for dollar. Some people were making more back then because we've given corporate America so much power to use policy to crush our ability to fight for those better wages, hours, conditions, and the ability for us to support our families. And then they've thrown us outrage candy to make us hate each other instead of where it really belongs. Corporate boardrooms, business roundtable, bad policymakers, neoliberal economics, and which is why I cannot wait to sit down in a room with my good friend Joe Walsh and have a spirited discussion over a couple of beers. We are putting that together so we can do it face-to-face. I don't want to do it over Zoom. We are going to sit down and we will put that podcast out unedited. I will not edit it, and it will not be FCC friendly, so you will not hear it on the radio. That I can guarantee you. But I want to hear your thoughts. Anything I've said got on your skin, I want to hear it. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com, or give us a call, 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come the talk. If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our labor history in two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible two-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to TheRickSmithShow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at TheRickSmithShow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-866-416-7425. You know, when you have an economy where people have hope and opportunity, you don't see dumb things happening. You don't see people committing idiotic crimes. You don't see recidivism going through the roof. In fact, I had a conversation with someone today who reminded me of an interview I did, you know, several months back with an apprentice with the IBEW. He was somebody who spent time in prison, came out of prison, did his time, paid his debt to society, ended up getting into an apprenticeship program with the electrical workers, and is now living the dream. You know, he's got a beautiful home, wife, children, a job that's going to, you know, be a career, all that stuff. And again, hope and opportunity. Never going to go back to the idiot knucklehead stuff he did in the past, on the straight path. We were in Michigan during the Working Class Heroes Tour. We sat down with Dana Nessel, the Attorney General, there in Michigan, to talk about their program of getting, you know, convicted felons when they come out of prison to get into these apprenticeship programs. And their program showed a 0% recidivism rate. When people got these jobs, when people got these opportunities, they didn't F it up. They took the opportunity. They moved forward. They bettered their lives. And look, I can say the same thing about myself. It was because of the job that I had that I was able to support myself as a younger man and stop doing the knucklehead stuff you do in your late teens and early 20s and get on the straight and narrow. This is what we need to make sure we do going forward. And we don't have dumb stuff happening. The sad reality is we're in a moment right now where it's almost the Hunger Games. There's so much desperation out there. And people are, you know, perfect example, over the weekend, I saw this story of a 13-year-old who evidently was breaking into people's cars and ended up getting shot and killed because he was breaking into cars. And it brings up this question. Is the, you know, the 75 cents on the dashboard worth killing somebody over? Is that a crime worth being executed over? You know, as I was reading the story, I was thinking about that guy in Texas who three criminals came out of his neighbor's window carrying a TV and some other stuff. He knew the family wasn't home. He's on the phone with the police. The police are on the way, but he's standing in the kitchen with the gun itching. He tells them, I'm gonna go out there, I'm gonna kill those guys. And he walks out in the front yard and he shoots all three of them in the back. He was under no threat. It had nothing to do with him. But because Well, they were stealing. He executed them. Now, if it's Texas, he got away with it. Is that the society we want to have? Again, the question is if we're going to have a society based on the one who dies with the most toys wins, what do you do with all the losers? Because when you've got Elon Musk and Bezos who have such enormous wealth that they've taken from so many others, what do you do with the people who don't have the ability to sustain? What do you do with them? What do you do with people who don't have health care and can't get the care that they need? Do we let them die on the street corner? What do you do with people who can't feed themselves? You know, growing up in the projects, our house was robbed constantly. I mean, I can think of probably 20 times where people burglarized our home. And what'd they steal? Because we didn't have anything. They stole food. They stole what little things we had. In fact, I still remember I had saved shoveling money. $20 I had in the bottom drawer of my dresser. And they stole it. Angry I was. But that's what happens when you live in desperation. And this is where smart policy should give people opportunity. Hands up, not hands out. But it's frustrating because what we've got is we've got a system based on, you know, I'm the winner. I mean, it's crazy. And the question is, you know, given the fact that what we're going to see over the next couple of months, over the next 2 years, does any of this change? Because I argue our political system is exactly where the rich and powerful want it. Broken, ineffective, divided, and having people throw up their hands and go, we can't do anything. It's hopeless. While they are robbing us blind. And I go back to this. When I first started working, my first real union job, in today's dollars, because I love that Bureau of Labor Statistics inflation calculator. And go back, you know, when your first job was back in whenever. Go back in there, put what your starting wage was there. And then see what it would be today. And look at how corporate America has crushed the wage structure in this country. Now, they'll want you to believe, oh, it's because of those immigrants. It's not the immigrants. It's the power that they have to keep wages suppressed. It's the power that they've been able to use to, we're going to threaten outsourcing. It's the power that they've had to threaten automation. It's the power that they've had to fire workers when they organize and strike. It's the power that they've had to use government over us. I keep saying, look, at the end of this, we have got to come together around an idea that we want an economy that's going to work for us. Red hat, blue hat aside. And look, we can have spirited discussions about whether, you know, people should be able to transition and live lives as whatever. We can have those spirited discussions. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter at all to me. Don't care. What I care about is every working person having the ability to support themselves and their families and to lead a dignified life. And that work is rewarded. It's respected. That to me that's the true north. All the other stuff, we can fight over. And this is where the podcast episode with Joe Walsh, I'm kind of looking forward to. Because Joe and I have always had this very cordial relationship on air. Because, look, we're both fighting in this world for the same thing. We both want democracy. We both want a democratic system that Republicans, his former party, working diligently to undo. We both have a view and a vision and an understanding of what our country should be. That's not the view of the current Republican leadership. So this should be an interesting thing. And when we get it out, we'll make sure everyone has an opportunity to take a listen to it. Again, I'm going to give you the explicit language warning. The FCC would not be thrilled if this is going to go up. I guarantee it. But I want to hear your thoughts. Share some. If something I said got on your nerves, I want to hear it. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we come back and talk about a little bit about the ingredient strike.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Another batch of Biden documents with classified markings have been found. CBS's Adriana Diaz.
This revelation follows the initial discovery of roughly 10 classified documents in November of last year at the Penn Biden Center,
which is a think tank where Mr. Biden had an office before becoming president. The FAA says a damaged database file caused this morning's outage of a computer that provides safety information to pilots and prompted a 90-minute nationwide ground stop. Julie Mellender was at the Charlotte Douglas Airport.
People were scrambling, and a lot of people were just trying to figure out what they were going to do next. Some people got a car and decided to drive, and we did consider that.
He'll be missed. I mean, that's a big hole in the music landscape.
That is Rolling Stone contributing editor Anthony DeCurtis. He says Jeff Beck influenced generations of artists. Jeff Beck has died. His reps say he contracted bacterial meningitis. He was 78. Jennifer Kuiper, CBS News Brief.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. Two courts have ruled a Northern Wisconsin Sheriff's Department conducted an illegal search of a detective's Dropbox account. Back in 2017, Stephen Bowers was charged with two felony counts of misconduct in public office. He reportedly shared the files with producers of a true crime TV show. The courts say Bowers had a right to privacy since the Dropbox account was private and that Taylor County deputies did not have a right to search without a warrant. The weather was bad enough overnight to close schools and other services in and around Chippewa Falls and the surrounding area today. Freezing rain and snow made for a slippery glaze on roads this morning. Driving is expected to be tricky all day. In sports, Michigan State rallied to beat the Badgers last night. Tonight, the Bucks are at Atlanta and Marquette hosts UConn. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Kelsey Miles.
Let the music roll.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
To protect his family from disaster, Steve used his camera phone.
Done.
By taking pictures of his important documents, Steve can always have them stored online. Learn more simple disaster prep tips at ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
To fixthecourt.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So day 165 in the Ingredion strike. Workers there in Cedar Rapids, Iowa have been on strike 165 days. We were there, if you remember back during the Working Class Heroes Tour, we visited their picket line and spent a day talking with them about, you know, this wildly profitable multinational corporation who, honestly, making big money, basically stealing wages from them. And what we were talking about before, the idea of companies continually suppressing wages, taking benefits away, making what was once a prosperous working class job, basically a poverty wage job that you barely get by on. Well, these workers are brave enough to stand up and say, you know what? No, we're not doing it, not just for ourselves, but for future generations. This cannot be stopped. And here to share some thoughts on where we are in day 165, I've asked Jason Davis to come talk with us. Jason is an international representative with the BCTGM International Union, their website, bctgm.org. Jason, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick, for having us.
So it's day 165, and look, nobody wants a strike to go on this long. Where are we? What's going on?
Absolutely not. You know, strike goes on this, you know, that's always the last course of action to take when you're getting to trying to protect your contract of what you've had. You know, this strike has been more about keeping what we have as opposed to advancing in this contract, which has been a rather frustrating part. But yeah, we're day 165 into this strike. The members' resolve on the line remains steady. I'm so proud of this group, Local 100G here in Cedar Rapids. We have had 165 days into this strike. We still have nobody that has crossed our picket line. So they have stayed out 100% through this whole piece. It's been hard on the families and hard on the members out here on the line. We went through the holidays, went through the new year on strike, but the community support still is very strong here in Cedar Rapids. And then the labor support here in Cedar Rapids is just phenomenal. The Hawkeye Labor Council here, its executive director, Rick Boyle, has been huge helps for us out on the line, putting together toy drives, putting together food drives, things of that nature. Donations continue to come in, which helps supplement the small amount of strike pay that our folks are getting. But it's enough to put a little bit of food on the table and try to get through with the duties that they're going through on the strike.
Now, the frustrating part of this, Jason, is, you know, when we were talking to the people on the picket line, it's just what you said. These are folks who are not looking to make a killing. They're just looking to make a living. They're looking to hold on to the standard of living that they've had for years now. They don't want to lose even more. And as I understand, there have been concessionary contracts in the past. This was kind of the end of the road of them saying, no more, we're drawing the line here. And yet this is a wildly profitable company with a CEO who in 2021 pocketed, according to the AFL-CIO, over $10 million or 449 times what those guys on the picket line are making. So it's not like they don't have the money. It's that they don't want to share it with the workers.
That's exactly it, Rick. And it's very disgusting when you think of it that way. You know, this company being wildly profitable the way it is, it's profitable with the work rules that are in place in that contract today. And to come in and try to gut those work rules, to cut some of our overtime scheduling, and even more so, try to cut our vacation time, cut into actual days away from work, while they're turning such a profit, it's disgusting. It should be criminal, but it's absolutely disgusting.
Now, when we were there, and correct me if I'm wrong, help me to remember this, because I was literally shocked when the gentleman explained it to me. He said, well, the language that they want to add into your contract is to force these guys and gals to work 14 straight days, 12 hours a day without a day off. Is that accurate?
It's feasible that could happen, and that's absolutely a possibility that could come into it with some of the scheduling pieces that the company's pushed forward. You know, that's kind of a maximum. You know, if they choose to go to a 12-hour type of shift, you know, don't worry, you're not going to work more than 14, 12-hour days in a row. One of the things they benefit from, our members benefit from, and the schedules that they're on now, it's a 8-hour type of schedule, is when they have off days, their days are off. They aren't called back into work. These aren't on-call employees. They get their hours. They work 7 straight days before they get a day off. They get that day off. They know they're going to have that day off. Under the company's proposal, on these 12-hour shifts, these folks could be called into work it turns him into somewhat of a call-in employee. And the only reassurance they did give us is, don't worry, you won't work more than 14 straight days.
Jeez. You know, Jason, you know, my mind, I'm now spinning back to the 1800s, you know, when we had a six-day work week from sunup to sundown, and you were basically just tools that were discarded, where you actually got up, you lived to work. And we fought, people fought, bled, and died for the 8-hour day, for 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what we will. And I hear this and I'm going, have we literally gone back 100 years? Have we really reverted that far back?
You know, that's the sad part to some of that greed. Yeah, absolutely. You know, in some cases, what really shocks me, you know, and one of our continuing sticking points currently is this vacation in today's economy. And trying to get workers into a factory, who cuts vacation? What employer shortens the amount of time that people get to have time off? Today's workers are interested in having time off to be with their families, time off to spend doing the things that they need to do with their families.
Yeah,
you know, it's like you said, you know, in the old days we may have lived to work, you know, but you know, we work so we can get out and live.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Jason Davis. Jason's an international representative with the BCTGM International Union, bctgm.org, their website. You talked about greed for a moment, and I find it ironic that the company's name is Ingredion. I find that very, very interesting. But there was a market scanner report, and I don't know if you saw this back from September, that announced that this Ingredion Incorporated was going to be buying back some 6 million shares of their stock, and their stock's at right around $100 a share. So we're looking at $600 million in buying back their stock. Now this is one of my pet peeves, because this company telling us we've got no productive use for $600 million. We can't give these workers raises. We can't invest in new equipment. We can't invest in new technology. We can't do. We're just gonna be greedy. We're going to be in Ingredion, and we're clawing this back. This is the kind of stuff that drives me insane. And this is where I think we need to be focusing more attention on this kind of stuff, CEO pay, this kind of just blatant greed.
And I know I'm not saying anything new to you or your listeners. You know, most of these executives, their pay is directly tied to that stock price. And as these companies put into the stock buyback, and you're absolutely right on Ingredion. During the third quarter, they got an approval for another $600 million to spend towards stock buyback. You know, that's why they're, as the market was taking a bit of a downturn, Ingredion kept going up, because the shares are artificially inflated through these buybacks, which only turns around to the executives and the wealthy shareholders that are making that much more money because of, you know, let's take this $600 million and put it back into our shareholders.
So let me ask you this again, because the company has announced they're going to buy back $600 million in their shares to enrich the CEOs and the executives. What are your members asking for again?
Our members just asking for a fair contract, Rick. That's the funny part, you know?
You're asking for $600 million? Because evidently they got it.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not, Rick. You know, we cost through where we believe our economic package is. In our economic package, we only look at increasing, I believe, as I'm looking at our last piece, it was under $3 million.
Is that a year?
Under $3 million of an increase.
Is that for the year or for the life of the contract?
Over the four-year term.
Wait a minute. Yeah. This whole thing is over $3 million over 4 years with a company that's going to buy $600 million in shares. You're kidding me, right?
It's a little more complex than that, Rick, when we get into negotiations, because each proposal has a different value to it. But when we look at the wage portion of it, by our calculations, when we were putting our calculations together of it, yes, it is very minuscule. It was around the $3 million mark.
Disgraceful. I mean, so then the question I have here is, if that's all it is, how much are they losing by putting out crap products? Because when we were there, you know, some of the people were saying, you know, they're putting out products that are, you know, coming back. They're putting out products that customers aren't using, that they're losing customers, that this is, and I know these big multinational companies don't care about their customers or consumers. They only care about fattening their bottom line. But at some point, it's got to kill the golden goose, no?
Diminishing returns, absolutely. So, you know, we had a strike here in 2004, and it actually took us 7 years to rework some of the bad product from a 78-day strike at that time. There's no telling how much bad product they have out there. But as of their third quarter 10-K reporting to the SEC, they reported a $9 million expense related to what do they call it? A labor dispute in Cedar Rapids. We'll just call it a strike. And that was only for the first 2 months. So when we take that out and average it out, that's $150,000 a day that they are spending to try to beat these workers. We've got 125 bargaining unit workers. They could pay these workers $1,000 a day and still come out 25 grand to the good every single day.
So then I got to ask the next question then. If it's not, it's clearly not about the money. Clearly, I mean, if it's only going to cost them a little over $3 million and they've lost $9 million, it's clearly not about the money. It's got to be about something else. So then my mind goes to the next space, which is normally what it is. Is this them trying to bust the union?
That may be part of it. I also believe it's you know, it's sending a message across the rest of their network. You know, but. You know, Ingredion bought this company in 2015. It was previously known as Pedford Foods. And Ingredion's trying to come in here and standardize, I think more standardize to the rest of their contracts, this contract, which, you know, which like I said, this location has had these work rules in place for a long period of time. This location has won several awards for being profitable, for being one of the better locations. I mean, they had some kind of a CEO dinner, I think it was, 2 or 3 weeks before they walked out on August 1st for their work performance over the past year. So, I mean, this is, you know, these members work hard. They put out a fantastic product. What they do it safely.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things that comes in this plant, too, is you know, this is cornstarch these guys deal with. There's a actual danger that comes along with working with cornstarch and ethylene oxide, you know, so it's a safety risk that having these scabs in here or replacement workers in
no,
here
they're
is,
scabs. No, they're
is
scabs.
Causing as well. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
stop scabs. With the corporate speak. They're scabs.
That's right.
you just sparked a memory in me, because when we were on the picket line there was a sign, you know, thanking the employees for their dedication and how much they meant and how essential they were. And while they forced these people out on the picket line, it's disgraceful. So let me ask you a last question on this. What's it going to take to get this done, and how can people help?
We're going to be going back into negotiations with them next week for a couple days. People can continue to help through our, you can check it out on bctgm.org for ways to pitch into the GoFundMe page. Letters of support always help. You know, those are the actions that we have right now that we're looking at. You know, it's letters of support, getting any donations we can through our GoFundMe page. Those types of things, like I said, help supplement each week's strike pay to where it makes it a little more bearable for these members that are out here on the street with no insurance, no unemployment, no income.
Now, you just mentioned something a minute ago that the company took a $9 million expense because of the strike. Clearly, they've lost money because of this. I look at what happened at the Supreme Court on Tuesday. They heard this case. Glacier Northwest versus the International Brotherhood of Teamsters 174 because of lost product. I'm saying eventually down the road, if the Supreme Court decides this, eventually these kind of losses are something these companies are going to sue for. I'm curious your thoughts of what potentially could happen when this Supreme Court, and I think it's a done deal. I think they're going to make the wrong decision because this court hates working people, but I'm curious your thoughts on where this could go and what it could mean to your members. Because, look, you guys have had some very successful strikes over the last year, you know, places like Frito-Lay and Nabisco and Kellogg, and I'm hoping here as well, but I'm curious your thoughts.
It could be devastating, Rick. You know, it's no secret that there's been a long, systemic and concerted effort to defund unions, and to whether it's Right to Work for Less, wherever it is, where they're trying to defund unions, and we simply don't have the resources that a lot of these multinational corporations have when it comes towards this type of thing. But when we get into a strike, like I said, a strike's our last resort. You know, that's what it is. It's economic pressure on both sides to try to get to a deal. And that's a fundamental right for what our workers have and our members have, is to be able to go on strike. But when you start tying in the possibility of being tied down to millions of dollars, that's going to put unions out of business, in my opinion.
No, and that's the goal. The goal is to continue to threaten you with frivolous legal action, as they have done for decades now, to keep you spinning your wheels, defending yourself instead of getting out there doing what you're supposed to be doing, which is organizing new members and representing your current members to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities, and rights for working people. As long as you're fighting frivolous lawsuits, they don't worry about you, which is why they need this. And which is why we, as working people, had better wake up to the realities politically. But Jason, I appreciate you taking time for us. I wish you and your members the best. I hope you'll come back and share some more thoughts with us. And when this is over, when you guys have won, I want to have you back again to celebrate.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us. Thank you for helping us get our message out, Rick. Thank you.
Good stuff. Thank you, Jason. Jason Davis, he is the international representative there with the BCTGM. The international union there, bctgm.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media. I want to hear your thoughts. Gonna take a quick break, wrap this up on the other side. Stick around. You'll listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1912. That was the day a strike launched one of the most iconic rallying cries of the U.S. labor movement. 20,000, mostly women workers, in the Lawrence, Massachusetts textile mills began what became known as the Bread and Roses Strike. Led by the industrial workers of the world, the strike was one of the most important events in the history of women workers. The phrase bread and roses had been used a year earlier by poet John Oppenheim. He published his poem in the American magazine. His first verse read, "As we come marching, marching in the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand mill lofts gray, are touched with all the radiance that a sudden sun discloses, for the people hear us singing, bread and roses, bread and roses." The second stanza continued, "As we come marching, marching, unnumbered women dead go crying through our singing, their ancient cry for bread. Small art and love and beauty, their drudging spirits knew. Yes, it is bread we fight for, but we fight for roses too." The poem described a call by workers not just for bread or better wages for the basic needs of life. It also called for roses, a life that could include time for beauty and meaning. In 1976, Mimi Farina, the sister of Joan Baez, put the lyrics to music. In 2000, a filmmaker used the title Bread and Roses for his story of unionization efforts of Mexican workers in Los Angeles. And for the past century, the image of Bread and Roses has continued to capture the imagination of working people standing up for their rights.
As we come marching, marching, we bring the greater days. For the rising of the women means the...
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
My mind is stuck. My mind is stuck in the economic portion of that contract, $3 million over 4 years, and yet in the first couple of months, they lost $9 million. This is a company, this Ingredion, a company that's going to buy $600 million in their stock back, and yet, hey, we can't do it. Can't possibly do it. This is why I keep coming back to Our politics are so badly broken. Our tax code, incredibly broken. The incentives in this country, so screwed up. And why, again, I come back to the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower. This CEO, this James Zally, in 2021 pocketed over $10 million. Now, the average worker down on that line, making somewhere in the $18 to $21 an hour range, somewhere in there. Sorry, that's less than $50,000 a year. And yet this guy's making over $10 million, as the AFL-CIO pointed out, 449 times the median employee pay. Stop and think about that for a second. Now, if you go back to the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower, and I say that tongue-in-cheek for those who don't know, Ike was not a socialist. Ike was a Republican president. But they did have a 92% top marginal tax rate. So CEO Zally here, on everything over about $1.6, $1.8 million, would be paying 92% tax on everything from 1.6 all the way up to gazillions. And the incentive for them to make corporate decisions on lining their pockets weren't as great. The incentives weren't there. Because that next dollar would only make them a little bit wealthier. Now, nobody paid the 92% rate. They did pay somewhere in the high 60s. Because there were tons of loopholes, much like there are now, because we incentivize certain behaviors, as we always do. And I'm not against that. But during the Reagan years, we came up with this idea of allowing corporations to buy back their shares of stock. And we didn't bother taxing them for it. So they took money that workers earned. They took the wealth that was created by the labor of these workers. They took it out of the business. They took it out of wages. They took it out of benefits. They took it out of fringe benefits. You know, it was sick days. You know, out of vacation, retirement. They took it out of all of that stuff. They hoarded it into the coffer, and then they pumped up their share price by buying back these stocks. Why? So they could line their own pockets. And I had someone the other day, because I said, you know, why don't we talk about stock buybacks as a way of dealing with price increases? Because these corporations are choosing to increase prices because they can, so that they can fatten the bottom line, so that they have more revenue coming in, so they can do more stock buybacks. And they're like, well, how does that work? It works just like I said. The more revenue they bring in, the more opportunity it is for them to buy back their shares, to pump up the share price of the stock, because most CEOs are tied to the price of the stock being their pay. An incentive, I don't know that is all that smart. But if we go back to the good socialist president, Dwight Eisenhower, that $10 million isn't going into his pocket. And we take that money and we invest it in things that we need. It's disgraceful that we're in a moment in time where work is this degraded. And you wonder why people feel angry. You wonder why people feel frustrated. And I had someone say the other day, again to me, they go, you know, no one wants to work anymore. And I retorted quickly, nobody wants to work for poverty wages for people who don't care about them. Of course nobody wants to come to work for you if this is how you treat them. You treat them with dignity and respect. You show them some loyalty. They may, I know this is hard to believe, they may show you some loyalty back. In fact, you know, when I worked for a company for about 20 years who touted the fact that they had the most stable workforce in the industry. They had a 1% turnover rate. And in the trucking industry, that's remarkable. 1% turnover rate. And that 1% was usually not by choice, because they paid really good wages, had the best healthcare benefits, had incredible retirement security, good working conditions for the industry. Let's not get carried away. That's why people didn't leave. But now that job, it's not there anymore. and their turnover rate is through the roof. They're basically like everybody else going to homeless shelters. You want a house and a job? Something wrong, folks. Something wrong. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You got a story? I want to hear it. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Also, if you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha.